All right. Hello and welcome to the Wrong Side of 30. My name is Brandon Farmahini, and I am joined by Miss Keisha Topengan. Say hi, Keisha.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, this is post
gender
change surgery, I guess. Say hello again.
Hello.
You are the... Oh, my God. That was underwhelming.
That was the lowest I could go, guys.
We're also joined by Billy. Say hi, Billy.
Hello. I also had throat surgery.
So we are back from a little extended hiatus so Keisha could heal up. Keisha, how are you doing after your surgery?
I'm doing good.
Well, what happened to your voice? It sounds normal. I thought had some weird Kermit the Frog thing.
I was going to try and keep that up the whole podcast, but I don't know if that would have been good. surgery was good. I got to sleep, probably the most sleep I've gotten in like 3 years. I got unlimited Jell-O and orange juice and tea.
Jesus, you sound like an 80-year-old. It's like, what are the best things that could possibly happen? Well, I got a lot of sleep and they gave me Jell-O.
Yeah, it was good, though.
I got to go to bed without worrying if I would wake up.
Oh, and then the part of it, too, is they had to put these compressor things around my legs to keep the circulation going because I'm laying down for, like, a few days. And so it pumps, like, air and then pumps back out. But every time I need to pee, I had to, like, call someone in to, like, unhook me. And then they, like, walk me to the bathroom.
Yeah, no dignity. No dignity left.
They stand there and they're like... I like to watch.
And then they would knock to make sure I didn't like pass out while I was sitting on the toilet or
surgery. Like watching surgeons now, I feel like we're in this weird intermediary period where when we look back on like the idea of letting humans operate on us, it's going to look super dumb. Like you ever see an old movie where there's the pilot, the co-pilot and the navigator in the back because they didn't have a computer?
Yeah.
And it's like half the reason they crash because the dude in the back's like, I don't know where we are. I have a globe, a compass. No, but really think about it. Like in the future, it's going to look so insane that we let like people who make mistakes, who are so imprecise, operate on us. It's going to be completely robots, right?
And it's, yeah, because I mean, I think like, so I was telling you guys earlier, I was watching The Craft and there's a scene in here where like Neve Campbell had like a bunch of like scars on her back for something and they were doing this like...
She was burned.
She was burned. And it's like gene therapy that they were working on and stuff. And the big suspense buildup after they did some spells to get the scar off, she was back at the doctor's office and there's a person taking a picture of it. It wasn't a live camera.
Yeah.
It was like they were wiping off the medicine or whatever and the dead skin. And Neve Campbell's watching the camera, but it takes like a 20-second loading period. So like the person would take a picture and it was like... Tick, 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 tick. And I was like, and the mom's like, is it okay? Can I see? And she's like, hold on. It's not there yet. And it was like, click, tick, 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 tick. And I was like, dude, what the fuck? So that without that technology, there would be no buildup at all in that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They're like, we could go with a quicker solution, but we found this really like holds the drama of the moment.
They're like, oh, yeah, it worked.
Man.
Cool.
Robots don't sound that good after seeing Prometheus, that robot surgery scene. Woof.
Oh, I don't know, that's man. Right.
Like, I think once we actually learn how to treat diseases, especially like cancer, my friend Gus was bringing that up when I was talking to him about how stupid medicine's going to look. And like, when we can actually treat cancer, we're going to look back on this period where we just poisoned people, but we poisoned the cancer the most as like a huge stopgap in medicine. Like it's beyond dumb, but like it's become so like casual to us because it's just a part of life. Oh yeah, you get sick with cancer,
poison it.
Yeah, put some poison in,
shoot radiation at it.
Yeah,
the wave of the future.
It targets your fastest, you know, dividing cells, which is going to be the cancer, and also your hair and like I don't know, a lot of other fucking things in your body that chemo screws up.
I just realized not even listening to you, Brandon, what you said is not important to me. I was thinking more about my own reference of Prometheus. You know how she hits
You're still there.
Like the alien is in her chest, right? And she uses the C-section button to get it out or whatever and just has like a live C-section of that alien.
Oh shit, that's right. It like slices her open.
Yeah, and it's like, why didn't she just hit the abortion button? Like, that would have been cleaner.
It's just a punch.
Future's pro-life, man. They're going to win. They're going to get that Supreme Court thing. Yeah. See, this week.
Roe versus Wade gets overturned, and that's why the surgery machine doesn't have the abortion button.
Yeah.
I forgot that she did that. So she, like, literally went underneath that thing, right? And then pressed it, and then it, like, cut her open, and then it just, like, sealed her back up? How did they
stapled her, I think. Or did they laser her? I can't remember.
But she died pretty soon after that, right?
No, she's the lone survivor, I think.
Oh. Is she the one that dies after the movie's over? Before the next movie starts?
Probably. I don't know.
Did you not see Covenant? Covenant was good.
Oh, Covenant.
Better than Prometheus.
It was fine. They were both fine. I mean, I just like the first one and second one. I'm an Aliens man. Everything after can come and go.
Watch the director's cut of Alien 3. It's not bad.
Alien 3 is so bad.
Watch the director's cut. It's not a dog that the thing pops out of. It's an ox, which makes a little more sense. And then Alien 4, I hated it until I read that Joss Whedon wrote it.
Yeah.
And he said that, like, literally every choice the director made, he would make the opposite. And when I watched it, being like, what's the opposite somebody would do this line? I was like, oh, this movie's way better.
I mean, that's kind of a convenient excuse from someone who's hashtag me too.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. Joss Whedon, pervert.
Oh, man.
How the mighty have fallen.
Everybody a pervert. Guys, just keep your dick in your pants.
I peg you as a Me Too guy too, Brandon. If you were at that level, you would have been Me Too'd by now.
Are you kidding? Why?
It was worth it just to see your face. Because you know you're guilty.
He's like, what? They all wanted to see my penis. What?
No. Oh, so good news. The remember the story I told about the thanks for the memories, guys?
Yeah.
They got back together, and they went on a vacation to Mexico.
Oh. Was it the healing power of the podcast that got them back together?
I don't know.
Was it your text message?
But on their trip back, they got COVID. And when they told us that, it took so much self-control not to text them back, thanks for the memories. But they're fully recovered. I think they got their first negative test today.
They got COVID on the plane?
No, they're pretty sure that one of them got it at the restaurant he works at.
Mm.
So they brought COVID to Mexico.
Oh, shit.
Good for them.
Why?
You are especially dark this morning.
I didn't think, Billy,
Sunday.
You were going to go to Mexico because Hurricane Delta was headed right towards where you were going, but you guys still went. And then the hurricane kept getting worse, and I was, like, legitimately worried you were going to die.
It was a tropical storm, I think, when we left, and Tulum had just gotten hit with Gemma or whatever it is, and it was maybe the most, like, insane I've ever been, because, as you know, I was already really nervous about having to travel for a wedding during hurricane season. Like, one of my best friends who, you know, works for an oil and gas, like, pipeline where they just, actually, it's just a gas pipeline. It's like a nitrogen gas pipeline. But, you know, he just looks at weather risks between New Orleans and Houston. Granted, there are a lot of weather risks. And he was like, yeah, by the way, this was in, I don't know, February. 2020 is projected to be one of the worst hurricane seasons ever.
God.
Like, oh, great. I'm going to Mexico during hurricane season for a wedding.
Well, what are the odds I'd be there when a hurricane literally goes over my house?
And then March, you know, COVID hit. And I was like, great. I'm going to be out of the country during a pandemic. So basically there were 6 months of dread leading up to this thing. And then we get there, and the first fucking thing that happens is a fucking hurricane is bearing down on us. And the first 3 days we're there, it's raining. And I'm like, great, came to Mexico, raining, and I'm in an Airbnb that's all fucking glass. And then, you know, meanwhile, the wedding party, to their own right, was all worried about people being able to make it to their wedding. I was like, I don't give a fuck about your wedding. We're all going to fucking die here. This whole world's going to be covered in glass. We're going to get electrocuted.
Yeah, everyone was like, oh, he'll be fine. He's staying at a resort. I'm like, no, he's in some dude's apartment right now.
Yeah, and then we, you know, like the day before the hurricane hit, we had to go to the hotel where the wedding resort thing was actually going to happen, and all these cars are just flooding out of the two-lane road, and we're basically the only car besides, like, utility, like, working vehicles driving in, and I'm just not even thinking about it, and we're just like, huh, I guess a lot of people are leaving, and then we walk in, and they're like, what are you doing here? Oh, well, we have a wedding tasting, and then we need to do a walkthrough of the venue, and they're like, no, did someone not call you? It's like, oh, we don't have cell phone service, we're in Mexico. And they're like, yeah, everybody has to be off the beachfront, all the hotels are being evacuated in the next 45 minutes, and everyone who's staff here has to be out of the area in the next four hours. So no, there's not going to be a wedding tasting. I can show you where the hotel is, but we can't really do a walkthrough. And the bride was like, that's fine, walk us to the hotel. I'm like, no, we gotta get a fucking cab and get out of here. Yeah. And then so we go do this fucking walkthrough of the hotel.
You
and
still
it's like,
did it?
Yeah. And it's like, it's not like a really nice walkthrough because they've taken all of the furniture that's on the beach and like stuffed it inside the hotel. So you walk into a room and it's just like benches stacked up on top of themselves.
It's like when people are on vacation, they think the rules don't apply to them.
Plan this wedding. You've thought the rules haven't applied to you for like 6 months at this point, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
So then we get the cab. And, you know, I just give the cab driver the Airbnb address and I'm not getting any decent cell signal. I mean, I paid, like, I literally, you can get on AT&T, you can get service in Mexico, but just where we are in Mexico, there's just no fucking service. And then I also paid to be upgraded to faster internet, still didn't get service. So the cab driver gets lost on the way back to our Airbnb and doesn't speak any English. And unfortunately, my wife, who took, I don't know, 10 years of Spanish, doesn't remember enough to communicate, hey, this is the address. If you can't find the address, I can't help you. We don't have a cell phone signal. We can't communicate with the outside world. We can't use GPS. So we literally just like drove up and down blocks until we like saw the other car.
Why didn't
outside.
You have a translation app on your phone?
We did, but GPS didn't work. Yeah. We were like, you know, hey, here's the address. Can you not find it?
You didn't get the offline? You have to do offline.
No, Brandon, the problem wasn't translation. The problem was we couldn't drop a pin.
Got it.
So he didn't know where the address was. So I'm there. I'm 12 hours before a hurricane's going to hit and we can't even find the fucking Airbnb we're staying in. And then I get back there and the people are like, are our personal chef, are they still coming tonight to make us dinner? I'm like, no, they're not fucking coming.
We're all going to die.
And then,
it's like, this is like a resort town. Like it is, it just barely has any infrastructure. There's no like airport, for instance, you know?
Yeah, and we were like 2 miles away in the actual like town where everybody lives, or 3 miles away in the town where everybody lives. But it's still like, you know, as the crow flies, I'm like maybe 2 miles from the beachfront, not sure. And now at that point, it was like a Cat 3 turning into a Cat 4, and they were projecting it was going to become a Cat 5 by the time it hit. And luckily, we knew all along, unless it drastically changed direction, that we were on the left side. So we're like, it's probably not going to flood. But then I'm sitting there, like, and we call our little concierge for our Airbnb, and they're like, yeah, we can't get you anything at the grocery store. They're 2 hour lines. And the guy who's the best man's like, hey, guys, we're almost out of beer. So, hey, Billy, will you come walk with me to go get beer from a convenience store? I'm like, are you fucking sitting? And I'm just like, and everybody's just staring at me like, why won't you help? I'm like, I'll go. I'm not buying any beer. I'll go help you carry it. So we go
like,
get
no
like,
one understood the gravity of the situation.
The only place that was open was like some organic food store that just bends over Americans and like triple charges you for everything. It's like $9 for a banana American, like $9 American for a banana there. God. And it's like somehow we spent $150 on like 36 Mexican cervezas and like, I don't know, a thing of like organic peanut butter to live off of just in case. We get back and I'm so mad. I'm so like teed up with, I don't know, just rage at this point. And they're like, what are we going to do? Let's watch some TV. And the guy was like, yeah, the vice presidential debates are on. I was like, it's my last fucking night on earth. And you're going to make me watch the vice presidential debates? Are you serious? And yeah, so I just went into my room and listened to Radiohead for about 4 hours and wept silently.
I guess I wasn't helping because I was sending you like evacuation locations.
I survived the hurricane. It really wasn't that bad in Tulum. It hit the place we were going the following week directly. And by then, it instead of going from a Cat 4 to a Cat 5, it dropped to a Cat 3. So once again, I made Maggie pack the night before in case we needed to run upstairs and take all of our belongings with us. I'm a great doomsday prepper. And one day there's going to be a doomsday and I'm going to be laughing my way to hell saying, "See, I fucking knew it."
God. Oh, man. I was really worried about you.
Once that was over, I was just worried about getting COVID the rest of the time because we went to a resort and no one was wearing masks except for the staff there. And then we flew back on Southwest, who, for the most part, did a really good job, except for the leg between Houston, flying back from Houston to Austin. By the way, no one wears masks in the Houston airport, so thanks a lot, City of Houston. Great job. And then this fucking bitch in front of me, who wasn't wearing a mask in the airport when we boarded until people told her to, took off her mask on the plane and took a selfie of herself, so proud that she defied any sort of logic or any sort of law or policy to politicize not wearing a mask on an airplane. I literally wanted to bathe in her at her wild pupils.
Jesus Christ, Billy. It's getting beeped.
Oh my God.
Fuck.
You should have crashed that plane. You should have been like, "You see what happens? You see what happens when you're stupid?"
I tried so fucking hard to take a picture of her taking the selfie of herself and could not get my phone out fast enough because I was going to tweet it at Southwest and be like, "What the fuck are you doing on your flights?" Oh, but then God. I also felt bad because they were actually really good at policing it on every other leg. But this one flight attendant saw her doing this and didn't do anything to stop her. But I guess if you confront someone like that on an airplane, they'll probably start screaming their rights.
Was she an older woman?
No, she was probably like late 30s, early 40s.
Oh my God, what the fuck is wrong with everybody?
I don't know. She was also talking to the person next to her who also wanted to get, like, who did the nose off mask thing about how they had had COVID and nothing happened.
It's like, I guess it makes all the other people who have died of it, like, I guess their lives don't matter.
Irrelevant. They probably thought that they had herd immunity somehow.
Oh my God.
That's the attitude. It's just kind of like, look, if we die, then we won't be around, so it won't suck. And if we live, then we live through it.
Nothing happened to me, and I don't know who all I spread it to in the time that I had it, because I didn't care that I had it because I was asymptomatic. But, you know, I'm sure they're fine, too. Fucking bitch.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying you. Because remember, we thought you had it.
No, I got back, and I was negative. We took a test the day I got back. We didn't do anything until we got our test back. But anyway, great trip to Mexico. Two thumbs up. Survived.
But the wedding actually happened. Like,
oh yeah, and people couldn't make it to the wedding, which was unfortunate. Like, the officiant couldn't come, so Maggie was promoted from maid of honor to officiant.
Oh, ooh. Wow.
Yeah, and then I ended up having to be the videographer, so I was running around with a camera shooting the wedding, which was actually kind of fun because it distracted me from, you know,
impeding
listening
death
to my wife deliver a beautiful message that was made up very quickly. But I did, you know, the only bad thing that happened to me personally was when I was shooting, I was trying to get like a reverse shot so that you could see the people in the, what do you call it? Not the procession, just the crowd. And a big wave just came up and hit me in the foot. So both of my shoes got filled with water.
Oh my God.
Great times. Could have died.
Could have been worse. Last time I was at that beach, I stepped on a syringe. Which was not fun.
Galveston?
No. It was a beach in Tulum.
You slept on a syringe?
Chasing the dragon.
Yeah, and it was awkward because, like, place we were staying at, my wife's friend worked, so she's like, "Don't get her in trouble." I'm like, "What?" But I didn't want to sign the document to release them of liability so they'd pay for the bills. Because I was like, no, if I get fucking sick and die,
that's
I want
true
Paula to be able to, like, cash in and live nice.
Oh, that's true.
So we had to go to, I forget the nearby bigger town to Tulum, but it's not that much bigger to get a tetanus shot.
Holy mackerel.
And then when we got back to Texas, I had to go and get all the AIDS and, or not HIV and
rabies.
What's that one? No, not rabies, not herpes. What's the other H?
HPV.
Hepatitis.
HPV? Oh, hepatitis.
HPV.
B,
hepatitis. I'm not a beach guy, man. I'm not a
because
beach guy.
You stepped on a syringe, you're not a beach guy.
No, I wasn't a beach guy before that. I don't like the beach. I don't like sand.
So you're Kramer. You're Cosmo Kramer.
You're Anakin.
It's coarse.
Of course.
Yeah, but the wedding actually was beautiful. And it, considering all of the things that led up to it that were just insane, it went really well.
I was like texting people that I thought you were going to die.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do. You could have sung at my funeral.
I was like mad because like Paula is like trying to get me to like not tell people their business, just let it be. And like when you were here, I wanted to be like, hey, Billy, you should not go to Mexico because that hurricane's coming.
I didn't have a choice. Maggie would have said, if we die, we die, was pretty much her attitude.
Well, that makes me feel better.
In sickness and in health, you can drown in a hurricane.
We're going to this wedding.
So how many people were actually like in person for the wedding?
11, including the bride and groom. Yeah, it was wild. I don't know if this is an overshare, but the parents of the groom had recently been divorced, and like the mom was talking about like how happy she was with her new boyfriend, and the dad was trying to win her back the whole time, and everybody was just drunk.
That's awkward.
It was kind of like being on a reality TV show. So you guys probably would have enjoyed it.
Probably. Did they get back together at the end?
No, absolutely not.
Man. This close.
He was giving a toast, and I think she started laughing, and he just stopped talking mid-toast. It was a little tense.
I'm trying to think, like, if I've been through a scary event like that. Luckily, I slept through the Vegas shooting when my dad was in Vegas. I woke up.
Oh, my mom was in the Denver airport during 9/11.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she ended up renting a car and driving back because all the flights and everything were canceled.
I happened to stay home during the Boston Marathon bombing.
Jesus.
And that my office at the time was like right next to the finish line. Like it was right across like probably one, maybe a few buildings over. And the security guard had said that like all they heard was that explosion and then like waves of people running around the front door. And he was like, what is happening? Yeah.
That's
terrifying. Crazy.
Yeah, my dad was gambling in the Bellagio, the floor of the Bellagio. His wife was like in the high rollers room, so she was like more like secured away. But he was just like out there on the floor and like...
The shooting was at Mandalay Bay, wasn't it?
Yeah, but so what happened is it was... the shooting was like on the strip in front of Mandalay Bay. So when the guy started shooting out into the crowd, all people really knew was that there was a shooter somewhere in the strip. So everyone started running into the hotels just saying, hey, there's a shooter, there's a shooter. I was like, so what did you do? And he's like, grab my chips.
I'm more interested in what your stepmom was doing, like in the high rollers. Does a team from John Wick come down and like stand at the door front and say, keep gambling?
No, John Wick, actually. Yeah. They actually had Keanu.
Yeah.
Bellagio, they have resources. But luckily, like I fell asleep before any of it happened. So I didn't have to I wasn't there wondering, oh my God, you know, was he okay? It was like, you know, after all of the business, I think like in my dreams is all like, that's always where the danger comes in. Like there's so many times where I'm in a situation in a dream where I'm like, I'm going to die in a minute and I have to make peace with it. And it makes you wonder what would be what is the more humane way to go? Is it not knowing and it just happens? Or is it knowing that it's coming and having to come to terms with it?
I think if it's an instantaneous death, both of those are viable options. If it's going to be a slow writhing death, I don't know. I think both those options are terrible.
Yeah.
Really, you just want to die fast. It doesn't matter if you know or don't know.
Yeah,
you just want to die fast.
The faster, the better. Like drowning, being on fire. Slowly.
Being on fire.
Neither of those are fast ways to
That's
die.
What I'm
those
saying
are
the opposite.
Agonizing.
The opposite of those things that I am describing.
I just imagine like falling out of a plane and not losing consciousness. Just like falling. You're
and
like,
having
oh,
to feel
shit.
It. Yeah.
You're like, how much of this fall am I going to like spend strategizing on how to survive it? And then at one point, will I just accept that I'm going
to
die?
You just let the fear take over, right? I would let the fear take over so that I pass out. And then I think I would try to force myself to pass out, and I'd just be like opening my eyes, like, oh, nope, I'm still awake. Okay.
Yeah, so it's probably a good time to bring up today's topic, right?
Oh, yeah. Surviving.
Say it with a little more gusto.
Surviving. Today's topic is surviving.
Now you try, Keisha, with your Scatman voice.
Before we get into it, I do need some advice. I'm trying to convince Coca-Cola to be, I want to be the next Jared Fogle.
You want to take advantage of little children pictures?
No. I want to be the spokesperson of a major corporation because it helped me lose weight.
Why did you choose the guy who's in prison?
You couldn't pick one that was...
Who, what's better? Everyone knows Jared lost weight, and so he's a Subway guy.
So then lead with, I want to be like the guy from Subway, except for all the kids stuff.
It's true.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean.
I didn't know what you mean. Earlier, I accused you of being hashtag me too.
Why would I mean that?
It's true. It's true.
Why would I mean that? No. How do I become a paid?
But he lost like 300 pounds or something like that. You didn't lose that much weight.
I've lost 35 pounds.
35 pounds, though, compared to like 200 pounds is, that's, 200 pounds is spokesperson material. You're a ways to go.
You have lost 35 pounds by doing nothing but eating hot dogs, which I feel like is...
And breakfast tacos.
So you should be like the Johnsonville guy. You should be like lose weight with Johnsonville.
Ballpark Franks guy. You could be Ballpark Franks.
I've lost 35 pounds by doing no exercise. I'm very proud of that.
I'm kind of worried that based on your sodium levels from eating all those hot dogs, you may have actually not increased your lifespan, even though you've lost 35 pounds.
Like
don't
stones?
Forget all of the Topo Chico. Each one has sodium built in.
So why don't you have kidney stones?
Your heart's going to explode.
I do think. I also don't think intermittent fasting is good for your heart. I'm not saying I'm healthier, guys. All I'm saying is I've lost weight.
I think that you just
there's a difference between being healthy and losing weight.
Paul is real happy right now.
Your application for the spokesperson because you listed 35 pounds loss and then all of the health risks that you are now facing based on this diet.
Yeah, that's why I can't advocate for it officially because I do think it could kill somebody. It's kind of like what movie stars do when they need to lose a lot of weight really quickly.
But no, they eat like a chicken breast, right?
No.
Oh no, you mean like a lot of weight, like Christian Bale and The Machinist?
Yeah.
Yeah. They like
Yeah, or
eating.
Heath Ledger for Joker.
Yeah. I think Beyonce did like a lemon water with cayenne pepper and cinnamon, like a detox. She did that like twice a day for 2 months.
And then she advertised for it and made like $15 million.
That's what I need to do.
We need to make money. Oh my God, funny story. My mom was like, hey, I was on this other podcast app and I was trying to find your podcast. And I'm like, what did you search for? And she's like, well, I forgot the name of your podcast. And I'm like,
that's not a good sign.
Mom, I was like, so then what did you type in? And she's like, 30. And I was like, okay. And I was like, and she's like, and you guys didn't show up until at least the third page. And I was like, well, mom, like, that's, first of all, know the name of our podcast and that will help.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, Quiche, you know how Google works? And I was like, mom, she's like, how come you guys don't try harder to be on the first page when people search 30? And I was like, we don't.
I mean, that's like a big search term. God, Grace.
She's like, but the best was like, you know Google, right? You know when you search? You know, sometimes I heard you put the less words, the more Google knows what
she
you're
knows
looking
what you,
for.
She probably heard all of this stuff from you when you taught her about like search engine optimization.
I was like, mom. And she's like, I'm just saying, when someone types 30, your podcast should show up. And I was like, okay,
come on.
Great.
Good Lord.
So yeah, so this is... surviving the world.
This surviving can have a lot of meanings. The world, a relationship. Keisha, tell us about that, by the way. Does the world know it's a former relationship at this point?
Yeah, but her former relationship is trying to get back in her DMs, and it's like,
wait, what?
He Quincy? Doesn't know. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know anything.
Okay, so yeah, so quick update. He got all his, so Quincy and I are no longer together.
And he was supposed to come pick up shit from your house.
He came over.
He was supposed to take you to Houston for your cancer treatment.
Exactly. And he's like, peace, deuces.
But no, it's okay. He liked her I'm not dead status. So.
And didn't he like Like he can't, he backed out on the day that he had to come pick up his drawer filled with stuff because it's he had just, like one item he couldn't pick up. And it was like, yeah, right before
was
you
just
were going
to
like, go.
Dude, just come pick up whatever you can. But he, yeah, so he came over, got all of his stuff out of the house. At that point, I was just like, let's just wrap it up. Like, let's just get moving because it was getting too long of this whole trying to coordinate when to come get your stuff. It was like awkward. My friend Corey came in here and like stayed with me the day he was coming in and getting his stuff because she didn't want me to be alone, which is amazing of her to be here. Once he got his stuff and left, like I felt like a huge relief kind of thing. Towards the end of that whole process, though, like he tried to like talk about like, oh, I don't know what I want. Can we keep talking? And finally, I was like, what is there to talk about? Like, you literally decided that you don't want anything to do with this relationship anymore. And
if you survive your surgery, maybe we can talk about getting back together again.
And all, yeah. Sure and like, and you bailed for. On me, like, literally the moment. Forget everything else. Like, not like that it was life and death, but it was like a pretty big deal of like, a physical yeah. thing.
You may
right?
have, yeah, yeah, cancer. Oh, yeah. Sorry, bye.
And that's when you're like, I don't know if this would have been the best thing, but like, if I was him, I would have been like, all right, I'm gonna ride it out and make sure that she's okay after surgery, and then we can have the conversation of like where we are and how I'm feeling. And I don't know if he thought he was doing me a favor by ending it before everything happened, but like, that's kind of like, yeah, no, that's a no in the book of. Decent things a person would do.
Yeah, at least have the decency to be like a sweet guy but then cheat on you in the background while all this is happening, so you know, then yeah. you could have at least been there and say I was there for you emotionally, physically I was with someone else as like a backup plan, like a plan B, God. So to speak.
But yeah, be a real gentleman.
Yeah,
so that I haven't talked to him, and there was like some weird after like text message stuff of like he didn't know. Like, after I got the surgery, I didn't hear from him. Like, I got the surgery on Monday. He didn't text me until the following, that Thursday.
Like, 3 days later or, like 10 days later?
Like, 3 days later. Okay. And he knew when I was getting surgery and all of that. And it was just like, hey, I saw your post on social and I'm glad you're I'm like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
I'm glad you're what? I'm sorry, I broke up.
He was like, I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad your surgery went well. I want you to know that I was thinking about you and I was worried for you. Well, I mean, now that I know that you were worried for me, wow.
Yeah,
like, what the fuck? And I was just like, what is, I was so frustrated and annoyed. And I was like, this is so stupid. I'm like, I don't know what you want me to do. Like, this is beyond, I don't even know how to manage this, like, friendship, whatever you're trying to have right now. Because at the bare minimum, be like, hey, hope your surgery went well and you're recovering. Let me know if you need anything.
You should just say, you should have responded back just really vaguely. Oh, you know, they said 6 weeks. And just don't tell them what the 6 weeks is. I mean, 6 weeks could be anything.
Or be like, the number you have tried to contact has been deactivated because she's dead.
That would be an interesting voicemail.
Should we fake your death just to like make him feel bad?
No, I just, I don't know. He's going through things, whatever. Like, I'm just, he can do whatever he wants. I don't care at this point. But plot twist, the thing when you have physical or surgical or health related things, you have your standard group of people and family that's like, hey, hope you're doing well, who reach out, ask you if you're okay. And then there's like that secondary layer of people that you're like, oh, haven't heard from you in a while. There was definitely a few of those people that I expected, but then one person.
Me.
I thought it was Billy was like, whoa, you okay? And I'm like, whoa, who's this? No. But one person, regardless of the fact that I had blocked him across all platforms.
Oh, yeah, it was me then.
Which I didn't know he did this. I didn't know that he had like actually deleted his old Instagram account and started a new one that's like a private one. He had reached out to me. Purely out of like, hey, I saw your post. And this was like on Tuesday. So right after my surgery, he's like, saw your post. I hope you're okay. Blah, blah, blah. And this is the person that Brandon has called to have a serial killer vibes.
David S. Pixley?
No.
He is capable of any task.
His skills are limitless.
At serial killing.
Do we have to give him a code name?
Hold on. I'm looking for a code name right now.
Can we call him Dexter?
Let's just call him Charles Whitman.
Who?
The tower shooter?
Yeah.
No. No. An easier
Dexter.
Like...
Dexter.
Dexter.
Oh, Dexter's a good one. Okay. So, so he sent me a DM or whatever. And that
Hannibal.
Was like... That was like the, so a guy who I have blocked on everything, including LinkedIn, Venmo, like PayPal, like on every possible platform.
I will not accept payment from you.
I opened up a Friendster account just so I can block him.
When do you get a long distance phone call? Will you accept the charges from John, Wayne, Casey?
Straight up. Found a way to reach out to me and ask if I was okay. But the guy that I just was recently in a relationship with who was living in my house waited 3 days to ask if I was okay.
Look, that's nice, but like the barometer for boyfriends shouldn't be is generally curious about my welfare after major surgery. We should raise
the bar. Oh, I understand
that.
I understand that. That being said, he did also come by the next day and brought my mom and I lunch.
Oh my god. I just love the mental gymnastics that this guy's playing with his friends like the night before. It's like, I kind of want to, you know, text Keisha, you know, good luck, but how do I do that without making her feel like I care about her? Well, what you do is you can't do it like right after the fact. You want it to be like a second thought, but you still want to be nice. So text her 3 days late.
No. Like, you know who brought, Dexter brought me lunch.
Oh god. And did you check it for glass or poison?
He like straight up brought my mom and I lunch and sat down here and like talked to us and. It was very, very confusing.
You look in love. She's got the gleam of love.
Move forward.
Brandon.
We'll auction you off.
Brandon.
Like an ox.
I was looking forward to my date on Tuesday, and that guy fucking found love. So what do you want me to do?
We will auction you off. We will have a public auction.
Gross.
I mean, I'm going to date other people. I'm still trying to find people to date.
You know, I hear that cancer survival clinics can be a great way to meet emotional people.
But you made it through. Breakups are hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been a little over a month now. There's parts that I definitely, you know, miss, but there's definitely things that I'm like, oh, this is a lot better that we're not together. But yeah.
I found this cool eHarmony article. Should you ever go back to an ex?
Oh.
Only if they aren't a serial killer.
After a breakup, it can be tempting to give your ex another chance, especially if neither of you has moved on. But can it ever work? And is going back with an ex ever a good idea? We investigate.
We need to do a Dear Abby segment, except for it's just Dear Billy. And it's just me giving the worst, most hateful
like,
advice
don't
ever.
Don't do it, you slut.
First of all, when did you get your partial lobotomy? And second of all, are they still keeping your brain?
I wanted to do a podcast, just call it Terrible Advice. I thought it would be fun.
That's a great idea. Fun. So, yeah, I mean, I'm good, you know.
So you survived.
Yeah.
But you're also backtracking real fast.
Not backtracking. Am I exploring
the past?
All options right now? Like, am I just allowing whatever wants to come into my life right now and give it a shot? 1,000%. Because me trying to only narrow it down to the guys that I'm swiping right on has not been great.
Are you narrowing it to only guys?
Yes, ooh. only guys. Ooh. Also, guys, there's a pattern that I've noticed. So the last three relationships that I've been in all kind of start around the fall season.
Good. It's good to know yourself.
Yeah, no, it's prime. Sounds like it's prime auctioning.
It's cuffing season.
Time.
I think I get really into cuffing season.
Cuffing season?
Cucking season?
Cuffing. You don't know what cuffing season is?
God, no. Is that like docking?
No. Okay, cuffing season for all the single people out there is the time leading up to the holidays where you want to get into a serious relationship so that when you go to meet your family over the holidays, they're not going to ask like, oh, are you single? And you have someone to spend the holidays with. Like you get Christmas gifts, you have Thanksgiving dinners to go to.
This is so shallow.
You have someone to like be with on New Year's Eve. And then when cuffing season ends is actually
right after Valentine's
Day. Right after Valentine's Day, because yeah, you get into spring break and you kind of like
want to be single
and you
want
to be, you want to like hoe it up a little. And then you go into the summer and then you have summer flings and then summer dies down and then cuffing season starts up again.
Is that what you think's happening with
who's?
Dude. Okay. So side note, she had like a store, an Instagram story like last night at like 3 a.m. because I woke up and I saw it. And it's like obviously at his house, like is at his apartment because I can hear his voice in the background.
They've been trying to break up like 1,000 times.
On and
they're
off.
Not a good match.
What do you mean trying to break up?
I don't know.
Like he like traveled to like New Zealand or something, hooked up with girls, hooked up with people everywhere. And she's still like, we're meant to be together. Yeah. But anyway, he got a dog.
And he cheated on her with the puppy. who are these people? It makes me worried about myself that you guys associate yourself with me. What's wrong with me? Everybody you guys know have fucking twisted.
Your anger, I guess?
Oh, I thought that was my charming quality. Hmm.
It is. It's easily your best and worst quality at the same time.
Good.
Yeah, so if anyone has any friends that they think I would mesh with, let me know.
Hey, Maggie, Keisha's looking for a guy that she can take around the family for holidays and survive Valentine's Day, but then she wants to break up so that she can have summer flings and then have a little bit of a serious. Yeah, she's got to have someone who she can ditch for spring break. You know anybody? Yeah, she got a few people.
So,
she's not home.
She's not.
Oh,
so idea. We should do a breakup episode, like just about breakups, like around Valentine's Day.
Sure.
So we've kind of hinted at it, but it seems like there's something else you've survived recently, Keish. And I think it's not just a broken heart. It's a broken thyroid.
Yeah.
Are you going to live?
Okay, I am going to live. I got my pathology report back a few days ago and... Everything
it says here
in.
You're drunk, but you're going to live.
Everything is clean. They didn't find it. Once they removed the thyroid, there was no other weird cells anywhere. So I think I am officially
good.
Like without the threat of cancer, which is awesome.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Well, thank
now
you.
I don't have to feel bad about all the things we've said in the last couple of episodes. Brandon, we're off the hook.
The the thing that has been the worst about recovery is like, my body is still adjusting to the fact that I only have half of a thyroid. And so my fatigue levels go from like zero, like I'm totally fine, I have high energy, to like I need to lay down.
How long is it going to take to adjust?
I think it's like a month or two maybe. Because right now my thyroid's like the left side is trying to figure out if it needs to like overcompensate or if it's working too much. And if that's the case, then I need to take, like I have to figure out if I have to take any medication to balance it out, which I hope I don't. But that's the only thing. Like I'm all energetic and I'm like, I can do it. And then halfway through like my first work day, I was like, fuck. Like I need to lay down. But otherwise, I'm good.
Good. Well, I'm glad all that's over so we can stop feeling guilty when we make fun of you.
Yeah, it has been really hard on me personally.
I know. I kept having to tell him, like, you know, this is for her own good.
She needs to learn a fucking lesson.
Mortality. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. My dad's had prostate cancer twice. I know what it's like to watch family go through it. So
it's
to watch
stressful.
A friend's not as painful, but yeah, it's got to be exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, that took up like all of October for me, you know?
I just don't know how you think. Like, it's the one thing to like the physical toll of, you know, having to go through all of it, but just like how you keep your mind on the mundane tasks of
right.
Being
and
an
it was
adult
like,
over 30.
Well, that was funny, right? They were like at work, they're like, oh my God, Keisha, like, I hope everything's okay. Before you go though, can you handle billing?
You were like, go like die or just drive to Houston?
And there, I mean, nothing against my work. My work has been amazing during this whole process, but that was like a really funny thing for me. And it actually kept my mind off of the stress of having to think of the surgery because I was like dealing with billing, like trying to wrap up everything work-wise so that I could be out for a week and a half was a really good distraction from just sitting there being like, what is life? You know, am I going to die? But it was like, oh, I got to do billing. Oh, their install's not working or... Fuck, I didn't send that email.
Yeah, it keeps you distracted. It keeps you going.
You would have been much better off in Mexico than I was during that hurricane. I mean, it's like, you would have been like, oh, the vice presidential debates. This will keep my mind off things.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had a crazy thought. I was like, you know what? Motherfucking hurricane is going to wipe out Billy. This fucking thyroid thing is going to wipe out Keisha. They're going to be like, what the fuck happened, Brandon? both of his podcast team died within like a few weeks of each other. That's super weird. I don't know, like, is it me?
We did it, though.
Is it something with me?
We survived.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. Back to the topic. There we go.
Yeah, I thought I would. I was trying to. I don't know how to make any of this funny.
Surviving?
Because I was trying to figure out, yeah, what could I bring in? And it probably, like, I guess, like, you know, my sabbatical a couple years ago. But there's really not a lot funny about it. So I'm like struggling of how to tackle it. I thought I would get to it in a different health podcast, but I'm fine talking about it.
I think I think what could be funny and interesting is like whatever your coping mechanisms were to try to have some sort of normalcy during like your most stressful or challenging, not outside of booze and your Costco margaritas. But like,
what happened is like, I just started detoxing because I was like quasi addicted to opioids, like painkillers. And I say quasi addicted to where I could not have them and it's fine. I'm not going to go blow somebody for money.
So you're saying you're not going to put a Craigslist ad asking for.
But I'm also not going to be in a good mood and I'm not going to be able to work because I'm going to feel like shit and be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like a thing, like if I wanted to get work done, like I knew I had to take those pills and it'd get annoying and I'd stop taking it if I woke up with a headache because I could tell, all right, I'm already in withdrawal from not having it. So it's like doing that off and on wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
Part of the confusing thing is like I was being treated, but I guess I was misdiagnosed bipolar and I'm not bipolar. And I was on bipolar medication and it was helping me a little bit with depression, but not as much. So I kept going higher. So it was creating problems because I was using it to treat something that it's not treated primarily for. So I got to a point where I'm like, I'm done with it. I'm done with pills. I just detoxed. I'm not taking anything. And then I just stopped leaving the house. I couldn't leave.
Wow.
I stopped going to work. And that, like, you know, hit a tangle after a couple weeks. And, you know, I had to have some conversations and it was just decided I would go on, like, you know, an extended medical leave. It's like, you know, when you send crazy people away, basically. And, you know, then I got on a proper treatment, some antidepressants, and I started doing some meditation and learned, you know, you need to find joy outside of work. You need to be able to find, you know, stuff to do that can make you happy outside of work. And otherwise, like, you know, you're just going to be miserable. So through like help and therapy and with like, you know, new medication, you know, I got through it. But, you know, it was just awkward. Like there were like a lot of awkward moments where people were reaching out because I was the one that no one could get in touch with, you know, or hearing my wife, like, because I didn't text her back one day and then hearing her come back upset because she thought I'd like, you know, hung myself. I'm like, no, I didn't do that. I'm not going to do that.
Well, people don't know that, though. Like to you, it sounds crazy, right? That would be an assumption. But like I've definitely been around people and I've had people in my life that you really don't know how far they would go on,
sure,
like a perfectly bad day, you know?
Yeah.
And that's scary.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge deal. And, you know, it's not always clear that it's a normal thing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you shouldn't feel stigmatized for people knowing about it. Because, like, I would lie as much as I can to keep people from finding out the truth. Because it's like, you know, especially with the industry I was in, am I ever going to be able to be insured?
Yeah.
You know, are they going to be like, this guy's fucking crazy? Right. And I don't think I never did anything crazy. I never acted out and, you know, did anything strange. But, you know, it was just generally an awkward time. And I'd have friends come in and like, you know.
That's kind of explained the Jared Fogle comment earlier, though.
No, come on. It was just a joke.
Well, one thing I think you guys have both experienced like depression personally. But like one thing that was part of why I think I was in that relationship with my ex-fiance for 6 years was I had to kind of deal with his untreated like depression. And there were times where like when I had tried to break up with him over things before, there was a point where, you know, it was like the usual, like, I can't live without you, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, yeah. And then there was definitely one night where he like took like a knife from the kitchen and was like, if you break up with me, like, I will kill myself. And I was 25.
And you looked back at him, you said, that's an empty threat. Do it. Do it.
Do it, you little bitch.
It was like, what the fuck? And at 25, 26, right? Like, guys, like, no one tells you what to do if you're in that situation. And like, I didn't know what to do. And I was like, okay, we won't break up. I'll stay with you. But like, thinking back on that, like, that fucked me up. That totally fucked me up. And that felt like now I have to be okay with him doing all of the shitty things that he did for a long time, because I knew that in the back of my mind, leaving him wasn't an option because he would kill himself. And that was like a manipulative, toxic, all of the words that people use now to describe things like that. But at that point, I just thought sticking with him was me being a good girlfriend.
Right.
And there's a bunch of stuff that no one ever tells you. No one teaches you how to get through that. There's no books that you can read.
You just have to go through it and deal with it.
Yeah.
And like, I'll tell you, like, you know, if you have to do something for your own best interest, do it. And it's not an easy world. Not everyone's going to understand. It was super weird and awkward eventually going back to work. And they did let me come back for a little bit, but like I got to throw a shout out to the broadcast crew at RT. They were tremendous. I had a really great time with them. Especially the broadcast editors who made a little nook for me as I came in to take over producing halfway through the second run of a sports show. And I still end up getting canceled, but at least in the second half, we got to do some fun stuff. Anyway, it's so strange. Like, it's a lot like if you guys watch Mad Men, and after he had his breakdown, and I'm no Don Draper, but it's awkward. It's awkward coming back after a thing like that, because you feel like, and people probably, everyone knows, you have no idea what they're thinking, what's going on in their heads. And then most of all, you're just kind of like, I don't know how long I'm back for.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is, let's just do this for a little bit and see how it goes. It's never going to be easy, but at the end of the day, you have one life, you know, and you got to make sure you're doing what's best for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you have other people close to you, if you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be treating them intentionally or unintentionally the way that they need to be treated. Yeah, everything's fine now. I will say, if there are any guys out there who did have, like, you know, extended addictions to pain pills and you're still having problems, go get your testosterone checked. I don't know if that's the reason why my T is low, but opioid abuse can permanently lower your testosterone count. So, you know, those are the realities.
I didn't know what to say to that. You chase the dragon so far that you get low T. So,
yeah.
There are worse things than death, everybody.
Well, I mean, but that's the problem with opioids, is because sometimes they start causing problems that you then need them to fix. You know, so at the point in time where you already have chronically low T, it makes you succumb more to, you know, being emotional or being depressed, being anxious. And then you're just like, oh, I need another painkiller, you know, give me another Tramadol.
Ooh, that's what they gave me. That's what they gave me.
Yeah, it's the good. That's the stuff.
So
that's the good shit.
When you got your first testosterone boost, did you just turn into the Energizer Bunny? Did you just want to have sex all the time?
Lift cars?
No.
And trucks?
No, because...
Did you start speaking like Randy Macho Man Savage?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So you want to hear a really funny, random story about survival? This is going to be how my dad survived. So raise your hand in the audience if you know that I was scarred and saw a dead body who got blown away by the cops when I was 11 years old.
Jeez. That does explain a lot.
It sure does. So when I was, I guess I was 12, I'm pretty sure, because my sister was going around doing college visits. And so we were driving from Dallas up to Chicago because she was looking at Northwestern and DePaul. So it was the summer of El Nino, I think. What was that, 98, 99? It was whenever that big summer thing was, and Chris Farley was doing that bit. We drive up to Chicago. The AC goes out in our white privileged suburban conversion van with like the back seat that folds down into a bed. And we had a TV and a VCR in the back. So I just kept watching like Miss Doubtfire and Die Hard and shit like that. Surround. But there was no air conditioning. So it was like, I imagine it's like when you're smuggled across the border in like a box car or something like that. And they don't give you any water. But you're watching Miss Doubtfire at the same time, which was kind of nice. But either way, we go to Chicago. We're coming back. We stop in Tulsa, Oklahoma. To this day, I will never forgive Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you're a listener from Tulsa, Oklahoma, I fucking hate your town, man. So we're in this Embassy Suites, and my mom and my sister are both drying their hair. And have you been to an Embassy Suites before? They're all kind of the same.
Good breakfast.
They have that like square or triangular shape, and there's the big like open middle of the whole thing. So you can walk around the edge, and you can see straight down into this, you know, atrium where they serve food and the bar is and everything. And they all have that. It's like their distinguishing feature. Well, I'm sitting there watching TV and I hear two hair dryers next to me. And then I just hear this, kind of shocked. And I just stand up from the television and walk to my mom. I'm like, Mom, I think I just heard a gunshot. And she was like,
oh, shit.
She was like, Billy, you're exaggerating things. I guess people know that Billy is short for William, but William, you're exaggerating things. You probably just heard it on TV. And I was like, Mom, there wasn't a gun on TV. I would know if I heard it on TV because there'd be a fucking gun on TV. Yeah. And she's just like, nothing happened. I didn't hear anything.
I was watching Teletubbies, unless there's been a drastic shift in tone.
And my dad is not in the room. And so then I just go back and sit watching TV and the door suddenly swings open and he crawls into the room.
Oh, shit. And he's like, your dad's crawling on the floor?
My dad, who was probably like 250 pounds at the time, comes like army crawling into the room. And I mean, he's an Air Force vet, so I guess he knows how to do it. But he was just like, quick, lock the door. He's like locking the doors. He's like, there's someone downstairs with a gun.
My dad,
we're all just basically in lockdown in there. And then we get a call, like an automated recorded call. They had taken the time to like quickly record a call and say, the police have come. They've apprehended you may have heard a disturbance. The police are here. It's safe. But please stay in your rooms is basically the message, which is like, cue. Everybody opens the doors and goes and looks over this railing. And there's just like this, like right next to the elevator door. There's just this like arm and just puddle of blood. And there's like all of these like teenage girls in the center, like screaming and crying and shit. Oh.
What happened?
Who was the guy?
Why did they shoot the guy?
So my dad is like, my dad has this sickness where there could be 40 pillows in a room, but he always has to go down and ask for extra pillows from the front desk. So he goes down, he's getting pillows, and then he walks into the hotel and he's holding these two pillows. And suddenly this guy just sprints in and starts hitting closed door. My dad's like, is everything okay? Because he hears kind of like what's going on. And he's like, there's a guy with a gun. And my dad looks, he just kind of pokes his head around the wall, looking out the door. And this guy's running towards the elevator that he is on with the doors closing, holding like a giant revolver in his hand.
Jeez.
And the doors just close. And then somewhere between like 0 and 5, he gets off the elevator and just immediately hears gunshots and drops to the deck and just starts crawling back to the room because the whole thing's open. He has no idea what has happened. He just hears all this screaming downstairs.
He just went through the entire hotel crawling and made it home or made it back into the room.
But they're all like a big square. So it's like you go up one set of elevators and it's like a square. So it's not that. I mean, he probably crawled like...
It's like the plot of a Rick and Morty episode, Jerry.
Yeah, it was very crawls. Jerry. Yeah. But I mean, to be fair, I'd do the same fucking thing. Like, it was terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, yeah, we all go bending over the rails and like, there's this dead guy down there and the police are like securing the area. And my dad's like, reminds me of medical school. And, like that. That's the end of my memory. And when I worked at the Apple store after college, I told my like one of my old managers this story. He literally, when he had to go to Tulsa for some reason, and he got in like an Uber and had them drive him to that Embassy Suites where he took video of it and like slowly zoomed in and put together an iMovie of this hotel. And like he wasn't even staying there, but like acted like a guest and walked up to the 5th floor and like slowly zoomed in down by the elevator. But yeah, that was so sad. I mean, my dad actually was shot. Like, he survived an actual like gang initiation gunshot wound in the 60s when he was in medical school. He was walking up the steps to his apartment, and there was this crowd of guys that just started taking pot shots at him, and he got shot with a hollow point in the arm. So he hates guns. And then for that to happen to him, I'm like, man, Dad, you're just a survivor. You just can't be held down by a guy with a pistol. So
yeah, what's with dads that have all been through this? Like my dad, he was robbed at least once when he was in college because he worked at a convenience store. He was really scared when the guy came in with a sawed-off shotgun.
Jesus,
because like that hits you and it's
that'll
like,
split you open.
Just a thing that all dads used to have to go through. That was just part
maybe.
Of the routine.
I bet you there's a story that my dad probably hasn't told me.
Probably in the Philippines, and it was probably
yeah, totally
machete.
In the Philippines. Yeah, because he
was your dad, the hero from the film The Raid.
What's The Raid? Just...
Is that in the Philippines?
I think it is. Is it not? Otherwise, I feel
know.
Real bad now.
My dad was kind of like a he didn't live on the streets, but he was like of the streets. You know what I mean?
No, I don't.
Your dad does not strike me as the street type.
I know he played basketball like with his neighbor friends, and I think there was some point where he started smoking cigarettes when he was 12. So you know,
right.
He's street smart.
Ooh, swing and a miss. It's Indonesia, so I am once again racist.
How rude! Yeah.
I got an idea.
All right, you boys and girls, it's time for Five Things with Keisha, with your host, Keisha.
Five things with my girl.
I love
that. My song. Top five is tips for getting through the rest of 2020. Because
the first three quarters suck so hard.
This year has been rough, man. I mean, I think I've lucked out on a lot of things. It definitely could have been harder. But...
Four more years.
But this year has been challenging emotionally, physically, mentally. All of that stuff. So number five, from what I've learned so far, is I think it's really important because of the lack of opportunities that we've had in the last few months because of COVID to like really prioritize your time and the people that you spend that time with.
Like your remaining days on Earth time or like your like
no,
8 to 9 p.m. sort of
like both. Because, yeah, like, I mean, to be fair, right, you don't know what's going to happen, right?
Well, so, the second coming of Christ is going to happen. I mean, we're days away.
And then if Trump wins, like, God fucking knows what happens. But if you're at the point where you realize now and you're like, okay, well, tomorrow this person could be gone or tomorrow I could be like really sick, and then you find yourself sitting somewhere on a shitty date, just walk out of the date. Just be like, hey man, not feeling it. I got to prioritize my time with people that I want to be around, and then just peace out.
Is this number five?
Number five.
Do you think Rush Limbaugh is prioritizing his remaining days?
Jeez.
Silly.
2021, Rush will die. It'll be a great year. One step up. Go ahead.
Number four, this is what I thought was a very valuable thing that I wish I would have done sooner, is trying to keep one thing consistent from when things were normal. Like, I don't know if you guys did this where I stopped a lot of the stuff I did on a daily basis because it's like, oh, well, COVID's happening. The pandemic's here. So I can't do this as much. I can't go to the grocery store as much. So I'm going to eat like garbage. I'm going to drink a lot more because it's the pandemic. But a month or two in.
It's cheaper to drink at home.
Don't let the pandemic make excuses for you.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm just going to gain weight because pandemic.
Wait, is that bad? Are we not supposed to be doing that?
You're prepping for hibernation.
Nobody's told me.
But yeah, I think it's important to keep one thing consistent. Like, whatever that one thing is. Like, working out.
Masturbating.
Sex.
Just not on the Zoom calls, guys. Masturbate somewhere.
Oh, sorry. I didn't think the camera was on. Oops. Sorry, you met Mr. Wiggle.
It's not even Mr. Wiggles. It's just Mr. Wiggle.
Wiggle.
Do you guys all have names for your penises?
No.
No.
That was a resounding no. You don't have a name for it?
No.
Why would I name him?
I don't name my disappointments in life, Keisha.
Number three. I learned this as I was peak unhappy in my relationship is find things to do that make you happy alone.
Masturbating
again. Yeah, we're back to masturbation.
Perhaps this whole list is just about masturbating.
It's definitely mental masturbation.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, there's no shame in it, guys. Love your body. Love yourself.
No, totally okay. But yes, I think that there is something to the well-being of any relationship that you each of you should be doing something alone to be happy and not only bank on the other person to be the source of happiness, which I believe 1,000% was a downfall in my relationship with Quincy, because there was a lot of resentment with me doing other things for myself, including this podcast and the other podcasts that we do, which makes me happy and brings me joy, that didn't involve him. And he didn't understand why I was happier doing this podcast than trying to find things to do with him.
So is that why you were late all the time?
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, that doesn't
Dude,
really explain.
No, no fucking lie. There was at least 3 or 4 times we recorded that I was late because we were fighting.
Shocker.
You're like, wow.
It's a great moratorium on 2020. Keep going.
Yeah.
Also, number two, it's okay to just cry sometimes and like freak out and yell and break stuff. Like, I think that for a long time in this pandemic, I tried really hard to keep things together. And then I started watching like a P.S. I Love You or something. And I just started fucking crying. And I wasn't even crying about the movie. I was crying about like life in general.
Yeah.
After I did that, I felt 100 times better because there's all this stuff that I was holding
yeah,
in.
Yeah, you literally get it out of you, right?
So it's either cry or just like masturbate a lot too. I think that helps. Both of those. Both have.
Yeah.
This is like one of those fortune cookie deals where if you just take everything Keisha says and add in bed at the end, it is a hilarious list.
Oh my God. Okay. So number one, that actually makes sense.
Number one.
Stop planning for when things get better or when the pandemic is over. Like, you have to just accept that this is what life is right now. And just try to adapt your life around it. Because my problem, again, my most recent, I think, experience has been this relationship is like, oh, well, we just need to get through the pandemic and then things will get better with us. Oh, we're fighting a lot because of this pandemic. Or we can't learn too much about each other because of the pandemic. Like, all of this shit was just because of the pandemic. And it's like the layer of stress that that's adding. Right?
Sure.
So the problem, though, is like this pandemic's not going away. And all this pandemic did was amplify the issues that were already there. And so I think if I would have stopped trying to anticipate when things would be better and I just looked at it at face value, then maybe we wouldn't have even gotten to the point of moving in together. I think it would have been just like, oh, yeah, we don't align on a lot of things. And we should just call it, like, peace out.
I mean, it's good advice because, I mean, honestly, we really don't know what's going to happen. You know, there are points in history where lifestyles have changed drastically and they changed over a relatively short period of time. So it's hard to know if we are in a small variance or we are just rounding a huge curve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't tell yet how much society has shifted. But it's, you know, it's not going back.
No, it is. Like, I was in Mexico. People weren't wearing masks. They were all like packed in like sardines. It's back to normal pretty much.
But then how come that was the only place you can go to?
I just want to know why Keisha's last one, her number one, basically makes it sound like it's okay for him to break up right before her surgery, because otherwise you're just kind of like half-heartedly sticking in it for the...
No.
Never mind. I'm not going to go that far.
No. I think... I understand where you're coming from, but that's in bed, but that removes the whole part of like being there for the person, like not being selfish
in bed
and promising that you'll be there for the other person. So it's not like I don't know. Between the three of us, if I was mad at any of y'all, like really mad at you, but then I found out that you guys needed help, I would literally package up me being mad at you and set it aside and be like, I'll be pissed at you later. But like, what do y'all need? Like, how can I help you? Like, because that's what a good friend does. Yeah. And I wasn't even expecting him to go above and beyond
just be
a good person and be a good friend and like realize that me going through surgery and all of this shit happening had nothing to do with him. And
yeah,
it was like, don't make this situation about you when it's not that I'm sitting here forcing my thyroid to fuck up, you know?
Yeah, you're not trying to, you're not getting thyroid surgery for attention.
Exactly, exactly. Yes. But yeah, so that's what I mean, right? Like even, I was guilty of it too, though. Like when I found out about this whole thing with my thyroid and then trying to schedule when I'm going to get surgery, all this stuff, there was a very small part of my brain that was like, okay, well, we'll figure out him and I after the surgery's done.
Sure.
We'll figure it out after I figure out that I don't have cancer. Like, but again, that's not fair because I really should have been like, shit, this is a real problem. This is a real thing. This is a life thing. Who are the people around me that are being supportive? And who are the people that have all of a sudden gone silent?
Yeah. Once again, I'm really sorry about the silence thing. I mean, part of it was I was in Mexico. Part of it's that I didn't care.
No, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
You know, to be fair, also, Maggie was really worried about you. I have to say, like, Maggie was constantly asking me, how's Keisha? Aww. And I was like, I don't know. I'm a shitty friend.
You're like, who's Keisha? Yeah.
Who? That dead girl? I had already written you off.
But yeah, so I think this is, I know this isn't like a super funny
Brandon, we should stop interviewing her replacements now that we know she's going to be back for a while.
Well, let's, you know.
Maybe good to keep them in the can. Keep maybe that take casting that, couch take, video
keep
alive.
It. Take that posting down off Craigslist. I'm good, guys. I think like, you know, I mean, this isn't like a super funny top five, but I thought these were like really important things that I learned.
No, I thought it was, I thought it's very good insight.
Yeah, this is actually probably a very good top five. If nothing else, you know, we do have the fortune cookie bed.
That's
in
true.
So if you could just reread them and just throw that at the end, I want to test my fortune cookie theory here.
Prioritize people, time, and things in bed.
All right. Check.
Try to keep one thing consistent from when things were normal in bed.
Check.
Find things that make you happy alone in bed.
Check.
It's totally okay to freak out, cry, yell, break stuff in bed.
Check.
And stop planning for when things get better and when the pandemic is over in bed. In bed.
Okay, the last one may not check out as well as the other four.
No, sometimes, you know, it could be sex can get pretty.
Let's do role play. I'm COVID-19.
And you're the mask.
I think there's COVID porn out there.
There is, with masks.
Is there really? Mm-hmm. That's a thing?
I saw that.
Yeah, any kind of porn they can commercialize that they're all up to.
That's
wild. I have a theory, by the way, a Pornhub theory.
What's your Pornhub theory?
So this past Friday, Corey came over and we had Thai food and a Paul Rudd night, which is the number one love of my life. So we watched a bunch of Paul Rudd movies.
He is ageless. He is ageless and charming.
We watched I Love You, Man, and then we watched Clueless. And we were watching Clueless, and as an adult, right, I thought, I was like, oh, this is this relationship between him as a stepbrother to Alicia Silverstone as a stepsister is fucked up. Like, that's weird as an adult.
Yeah.
As a teenager, I saw nothing wrong with that.
Really?
And then now I'm piecing the things together why there is so much stepbrother, stepsister porn.
It's because of Clueless.
It's because of all the Paul Rudd.
Sad Paul Rudd boys.
like
listening to Radiohead, masturbating to
because
stepsister
if you think about
porn.
It, like when I would see that before, now I, until I came to that realization, I had no problem looking at that porn. I'm like, oh, this is fine. But then I thought back on.
Wait.
It's that meme with the dog on fire. It's fine. Like, everything's fine.
You would watch sibling porn?
No, it's step sibling porn. Brandon, it is a very popular bucket of it's a category in Pornhub. Everyone watches.
They moved from MILF to step sibling.
There's this like running joke. I think it's on TikTok or something. But it was like there's always like a thing where it cuts into a scene and all you hear is, "What are you doing, stepsister?" But I pieced it together and I feel really uncomfortable.
That's where it is.
Watch.
Maybe.
I feel like I can't watch Clueless anymore because that as an adult feels weird. Oh,
I thought you were going to say I can't watch stepsister porn anymore. It's really ruined it. I'm going to have to cancel all of these subscriptions.
But did you guys ever think that that was weird? Like,
yes, of course.
Yeah.
But then why do people watch it? Why is there such a big audience? Like, it's like one of the most viewed categories in Pornhub.
Oh, I thought you meant Clueless.
People are weird.
No, I do think that the step porn thing is weird. But Clueless...
Wait, was it weird? Or you thought it was weird?
Yeah, I mean, it is, but then you're like, well, they're not related. And
see, but you justify it.
By all means, they seem like they've only been around each other for like 2 years of their life and haphazardly.
I don't know, guys.
Did the movie, I haven't watched in a long time. It didn't seem like they'd lived together for much of their life.
No, it didn't.
Oh my God, I'm justifying this.
See?
A lot of teen movies do not age well, especially the ones from
the
80s.
No, that movie rules. Clueless is awesome. I stand by Clueless. I own it. Amy Heckerling, genius, great soundtrack.
The soundtrack is phenomenal.
It's based on Shakespeare. You know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes. It's Emma.
What?
Emma. Wait, is Emma Shakespeare or is Emma?
No, Emma
is Jane
is,
Austen. Sorry, it's based Jane on Jane Austen.
Yeah. So.
Sorry, I was thinking 10 Things I Hate About You, which is cheaper. Taming the Shrew. Or not cheaper by the dozen. Taming of the Shrew. Cheaper by the dozen. Wow.
Cheaper.
They should do like step sibling porn based on Cheaper by the Dozen. That'd be fun.
I've never seen it.
Is that the one with Hilary Duff and
it's
like Steve Martin?
Did you
Martin?
Not have to read that book in junior high?
Cheaper by the Dozen?
No.
I thought that was a movie.
Yeah, based on a book. Jesus Christ.
All right.
What if you will die or you will eat the bottom five?
Wow, new song. New song's coming in real hot.
It's good.
Did you edit that from what I did? Was that on the Halloween episode or was that on the video game episode?
The video game episode. You also did some stuff on the Halloween episode, so I could add to it if I
oh my care.
I love your song.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of me in that. It feels very Metalocalypse. The bottom five things that happen because of surviving. Just the whole process of surviving anything. There's a lot of negatives associated with surviving. I think a lot of us, you know.
That guilt?
No, that actually would make sense. But due to the little amount of time that I had to come up with it, I did not put guilt here. But we'll see if we can work it in.
All right.
Jesus, I didn't think of survivor's guilt. Fuck me.
Yeah, it's like
the number one thing. Well, basically, we found out we were doing this right before we started. So,
I thought we talked about it last
night.
There was
no confirmation in the email. That's why I confirmed this morning.
You threw out like six different ideas. This is by far the worst planning we've ever done, but I think it's going to be a good episode. Yeah. So, number one, guilt. number one, surviving. A lot of work. It's pretty difficult to survive. Yeah. Like the uphill mountain that you have to climb, especially at the bottom, like the minute you get diagnosed with something or like the minute something terrible happens, it's like, well, I have two choices. I could roll over and die or I can survive. And it's like, man, rolling over and dying seems kind of easy. Surviving seems like it's going to be pretty bad.
Pretty stressful.
When you think about like New Year's and you put together a list of all of your resolutions and everything that you're going to change about yourself, you know how no one ever keeps almost any of their resolutions ever?
Yeah.
And so it's like the same like 10 things end up year to year, your resolution.
And over and over.
Well, imagine if you had to keep your New Year's resolutions. That's basically what surviving is. It's if I'm going to make it to the next year, I have to fucking do this list. And if I don't, I am going to die. And it's going to, if you're going to die, you want to die before you start trying to survive because then at least you won't have given any effort.
Yeah.
But like if you give all of that effort and then die anyway, what was the point?
And what if you promised God that if he like let you live, you would do all this stuff? Are you obligated to follow through with that? I mean, he knows you weren't going to do it.
Well, that presupposes that there's a God and that he's listening. But
well, what I'm saying, though, is even if you didn't believe in God, would you pray to him? Because it can't
We're doing
hurt.
The gender thing. Pray to it. Pray to her. I don't know.
To them.
Pray to her.
Pray to them. So you're a polytheist. Interesting. We're learning a lot about quiche in this episode.
I would.
But yeah you do.
Right,
you probably should follow through, Brandon. I mean, especially if you're praying to like the God of death.
I mean, who's going
to
keep you accountable?
Certainly Paula might, but I don't know. So yeah, surviving, tough stuff. Not looking forward to having to survive at any point. I think I may just give up. Maggie could do well without me, I think, as well. So good for her. Number two, once you actually decide to fight for your life, there's a lot of suffering and fear involved. So not only is there just the actual survivorship and everybody's, you know, asking how you're doing and stuff, but you actually for the amount of time that you are not sure that you're going to make it, it's like if you are going to make it, you want to make it as quickly as possible. Nip it in the bud. Do all of the high risk surgery. Do everything as high risk as possible and either make it or don't. Don't do the like tortoise and the hare tortoise move. Even if you win the race, it's like I'd rather be the hare and it be a sprint and be out of there and not have and to lose. Suffer or be afraid constantly. I'm just going to die or I'm going to make it. Then take all of the conservative steps to know you're going to win. I say, you know, give me that vaccine now. I want it. I don't care if people have been tested or not. Just whatever weird like bit of mixed embryos and whatever else you're sticking into a needle into my veins, I want it now. I don't want to draw this out.
Well, have you signed up for the vaccine? You can sign up for it.
That's too much work. Did you not hear what number one was? I don't want to go through anything laborious.
Jeez.
Number three, pity.
Who pities you for surviving?
Pity for you or from other people?
No, pity from other people while you're going through all of this. And you know what? I think we actually can tie guilt into here. They're two sides of the same coin. While you're going through it, everybody kind of looks down on you and pities you. And you're just sitting there just like, hey, fuck you. I'm still alive, you rat bastard. Stop looking at me like I'm a like piece of china with like a drape over it that's being constantly protected. I'm a bubble boy. Stop looking at me like I'm a fucking bubble boy, you piece of shit. I'm the one who's here living it. I don't need you looking down on me. And then all of a sudden you survive, and then you have all the guilt from the flip side of being mad at all the people who are pitying you. So there really is no, like, way to make it
pass. No, you're overthinking it. You're not. No one can feel all of those things.
I'm feeling them now, and I'm not even surviving anything.
No, you are overthinking it.
Oh, my God.
Wait, I don't feel pity for people for being mad at people who are pitying me.
No, you feel guilt. You haven't been listening at all.
Oh, what number is this one? Is number four. Number three.
I hate you so much. I can say that now because she got the surgery, so I do hate you. I want it on the record. Do you feel guilt right now, Keisha? Do you feel like you should have died?
I feel, you know what? It is, what's funny though. I did feel guilty taking extra days off from work. And I don't know why I felt like that.
You're in trouble.
All
those big corporations, those poor big corporations filled with their billionaires. They're really upset with you right now.
I had I guess you call it survivor's guilt when my buddy died a few years ago.
Oh, Jesus.
Because I felt like he was way more talented than I was.
So then you made it about you. Like your guilt was about like
that actually is what survivor's guilt is. I think I'm the one who threw it off by saying survivor's guilt's the person who survived surviving. Survivor's guilt is when you survive after the person who suffered died. Yeah. I totally fucked that up. And now I've got guilt just for being an idiot. Just for being really stupid. And this is the other problem with surviving. I survived that segment, and now I'm going to have to live with the shame of being a moron the rest of my fucking life.
Fine. People are morons about 99% of the shit.
Yeah, as soon as...
There's only 1% that you're not a moron about.
As soon
about.
As you wait. Said that, I was like, oh, wait, that's not what survivor's
so guilt
Brandon, is.
So, Brandon, you feel like you should have died instead of him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what survivor's guilt is.
That's so selfish.
How is that selfish?
Because you're taking away anything that has to do with the person passing away. Like, you're taking away stuff from that and turning it into something that has to do with you.
It's about, like, trying to reconcile how unfair life is. Because you really feel like it is... There's like no fairness in existence. This person has created so much more happiness for so many more people than I ever have.
And all of that's true, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't even know who it is.
Yeah. So like, it's not like I'm trying to make it about me. I didn't go to my friends meaning like, hey, guys, why don't we all think about me right now? But it's just, it's hard not to feel.
It's a natural side effect of empathy, I think.
I don't know, guys.
You put yourself in somebody else's shoes. And then when somebody else dies, but you're in their shoes and you survived, you're kind of like, huh.
No. Isn't there a difference, though, between empathy and sympathy?
Yes. Empathy is where you apply. Yeah. Empathy is pity. I'm sorry. Sympathy is pity.
Is pity.
Sympathy is pity.
Brandon, I think how I'm thinking through this is like you may not have gone to the funeral or whatever and said, guys, let's talk about me. But it's like going to a funeral and being like, y'all, I personally am so sad that he's dead. I am so sad.
I didn't do that at funeral.
But like
though.
That's how.
This is just what I was going through.
Keisha's wrong on this. I'm going to say why in a minute, but please continue your thought.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's how I think I'm recovering from shit that I have dealt with in my last...
I read the transcript of an Apple commercial at his funeral.
Based on Keisha's argument, you can no longer learn a lesson after someone dies. It's just like, someone died, no lesson.
What I'm saying...
Don't make it about you.
What I'm saying is that this is a trauma that I experienced in my last relationship, where I had to, like, I had to set aside how I felt about stuff because everything that was bad or I felt sad about, he turned it into his thing. It was like, I wasn't allowed to feel like that. So I'm very sensitive when something happens to someone else and your first reaction is, well, how that affects me?
Wasn't my first reaction. My first reaction was to get to the hospital.
I'm not going to have any. If Keisha dies, I'm not going to have any survivor's guilt. She's just being a real pain in the ass right now. And speaking of selfishness, I'm going to go on with my list. Number 4 on the bottom 5 of surviving anything is the brand. The constant reminder that you did survive and people look at you and be like, oh yeah, remember that time in your life where you went through that hardship and you overcame it? And you're just like, yeah, I fucking do remember. I lived it. I don't need to think about the worst part of my entire fucking life constantly and be completely known solely for surviving something. I mean, how many times do you think Lance Armstrong has heard that he had cancer of the testicles? You think he wants to be reminded constantly that he had cancer of the testicles? Why would anyone want that?
Yeah, your existence becomes defined by that. Like, if Castaway was real, Tom Hanks's character would forever be Island Guy.
That's true. Or Volleyball Man. He would never look at volleyball. He probably would just hates every volleyball he sees.
No, he'd be the guy who had sex with the volleyball. That would be his definition.
Did he have sex with the volleyball?
It was implied.
So, anyway, your entire existence, it's a huge reduction. It's just like, oh, yeah, that's Billy. I remembered like 40 things about him, but then he went through this hardship, and now that's like the first thing I tell everybody about him for the rest of his entire life. It's just like, hey, that guy with numbers on his wrist, Holocaust survivor. Don't know his name.
Yeah, that becomes your Michael Scott fact, right? Like, everyone, it's like, what's your Michael Scott fact? Like,
what is it?
Do you know how awful it must have been for everybody who went through the Holocaust to have those fucking numbers, like, physically tattooed onto them?
Yeah.
And just everybody's like, oh, so tell me about the Holocaust. It's like, I don't want to fucking talk about the goddamn Holocaust. It's the worst time in human history.
Yeah, it's like everyone has imposed it as like a personality trait for you. Like that trauma is now part of just everything that you are. And some people, I mean, embrace it, right?
Like, it's like if you ask somebody like who ran a marathon, it's just we're going from Holocaust, which is just absolutely awful, to something that's, you know, not trivial, but not like anything near that. But it's like, what was your favorite part about, you know, finishing your first marathon? Well, that it's over and I did it. It's like, it's always that it's over. It's not like, you know, when I did that 20-mile training session like 2 months before the marathon, that kicked a lot of ass and like my legs hurt for like 5 days afterwards. I really lived for that moment. It's like, no, it was a milestone. I don't want to talk about the training that it took for like 60 months. I don't want to relive any of that. It's just done. I did it. I ran a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they do also want to put that 26.2 sticker on their car, which is kind of fucking obnoxious.
That's true, which is like, it's like, ask me about the marathon I ran.
It's just like, hey, by the way, I kick ass. What did you do?
Don't make it your entire existence.
Anyway, number 5. It has to do with the expectations built around being branded. So once you're a survivor, once you've been branded and are constantly reminded that you're a survivor, you're now always a survivor. So it's another major reduction, right? Like, you can never be vulnerable again because you're this tough survivor. You have this like inverse relationship where like no one worried, like everybody was so worried about you, but now that you've survived, no one worries about you for the rest of your life because you're this self-sufficient person.
Right. So everyone's like, well, you got through this. You can handle everything.
Yeah. You can handle everything. Like, it's like, I don't want to handle everything. That part of my life fucking sucked. Yeah. Back to the top of the list, it was a lot of work. B, there was a lot of suffering and fear involved. Number 3, everybody felt pity around me, which I hated at the time, but now no one gives me any pity, and I'm kind of like, fuck you. Like, I don't want to be the survivor person for the rest of my life. I just want to have a nice, easy, simple going thing, and now all of a sudden no one's helping me anymore because they think I can handle it all myself.
Is this why you told us that the hurricane hit you? Did it actually not hit you, but you didn't want to be the one person who survived the hurricane?
Everybody else in the wedding party died.
Yeah. Is that why Maggie's not home? Did Maggie die in the hurricane and you don't want to be the survivor?
I have to go. I've got a funeral to go to. I got to bury my wife.
Isn't like 8 funerals?
No, I don't care about the other people.
Question though, do you think that if there's something that you, so outside of like any medical stuff, but just in general, like if you went through another hardship, do you think that the level of concern and care that people have for you goes down the second time around, like every other time you have to experience
something.
Yeah,
like you have, like if your cancer comes back, people are
like is there a,
well,
is there a fatigue?
I shaved my hair in solidarity the first time you were with chemo, but
like, is there like a fatigue, which I mean it's,
I'm taking
it's shitty
photos, I have headshots next to one,
like
so.
It's super shitty to talk about, but like I think nobody wants to admit to that, but I think to your point, really, there's guilt in that too from the other person of like, I felt bad for you, but how can I, do I still have to keep feeling bad, or can you just carry over my feeling bad from the first time and just extend my subscription?
Like, imagine being pen pals with Frodo Baggins while he's on the quest to destroy the ring. And you're just like, you're like, hey, Frodo, how's it going? You know, I went and did this thing the other day. It was kind of fun. Like, what's going on with you? He's like, oh man, this cave troll fucking like skewered me with this giant spear. And like, if I wouldn't have had mithril, I would have died. And I got stabbed by this ghost. And now I constantly have this pain in my chest. And it's just like, oh man, I'm so sorry. That's awful. I'm thinking about you, brother. Like, whatever you need.
Yeah.
And then like 2 months later, you're like, hey, Frodo, how's it going? It's like, oh man, like the guy who was guiding us, like he got killed by a demon and dragged off this bridge, and I watched him fall to a fiery inferno death. And it's just like, oh God, that's gotta be pretty tough. I was really worried that I got food poisoning the other day. I'm so sorry that happened. And then like a year later, you just stop writing him because he's like, yeah, I don't even know if I can get postal service anymore. I'm basically in this hell world and this spider just like stung me and there's no water anywhere. And I'm constantly thinking about killing my best friend. So it's like, yeah, I think you do. You get survivor exhaustion at some point.
Yeah.
But then I started thinking, like, imagine, like, there are two types of people. Like, you go to the hospital to visit someone. Are you the person that encourages them to fight when they're on their deathbed? Or are you the person that says, let go, go towards the light. There's no need to suffer anymore. I think I'm a there's no need to suffer anymore guy. I don't think I'm the guy who's watching someone go through a lot of pain and being like, fight, you can beat this. And it's just like, hey, man, if you want, I will totally pull the plug for you. No one has to know. Like,
I twisted my ankle.
No,
fine, silly.
All the pain can go away.
You don't need to pull
all
the plug.
The pain can go away.
No, get the pillow off me.
Just eat the pillow.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. It's, you know, it's thanks for the memories. It's not it's not easy to know exactly how to deal with a difficult situation or to comfort somebody, you know? Like, not every moment is a Hallmark moment. Not every moment is a movie moment, you know? It's just life's hard.
In summary, cut your seatbelt off. Disable your airbags. No parachute.
These are all terrible ideas. Don't do this.
If you're going to live, live. If you're going to die, go gloriously to Valhalla. And that's my bottom five.
Thanks for the memories. Don't be a stranger.
Well, we learned nothing today.
Y'all, we need to prepare better.
I did learn a lot about Keisha's life. I think that maybe people learned what they already knew about me, that I'm a bitter, horrible person. But Keisha lived, and she seems like she's pretty cool. So good on you.
Thanks.
Yeah, and we're going to auction her, find her a nice husband.
Oh, I thought you were going to auction off the part of her thyroid that got cut out.
I was going to ask.
Like a little glass jar.
Do you think they would send me a picture of it?
I thought you got a recording. Didn't you used to watch all those surgical videos?
I wanted to see. Did you know that they had to strap me down during my surgery? Because they said that some people, when they go in their like anesthesia, they like lift their arms up and try to help with the surgery.
Weird.
So anyway, great episode, everybody. Pats on the back. We survived, and all of our listeners survived another wasted hour of their life.
All right. I hope everybody has a great week. Good luck. Hopefully the election went the way you were hoping for.
Yes.
Wait, can we say that? If Trump won, hopefully the election
would
go. Hopefully you vote for a bigot.
No.
Anyway, I keep extending the episode. We should just kill it.
All right. Give us a review. Review it. Send us money. Put cash in an envelope and send it to us. Give us money. Or leave a review. Yeah. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.